Welcome to episode 6 of Yinzer Ballin. Craig and Brady here. First, let's start this week with the post-Super Bowl wrap-up. Once again, the Chiefs go back-to-back, beating the 49ers and looking for to become the first team to three-peat in NFL history. So what are your thoughts from the game last week?
I thought it was a very good game, to be honest with you. There was a lot of, like, it kind of started off slow at the beginning. Like, I remember watching the first quarter and it was 0-0 still. But, you know, as the game progressed, it got better and it got more enjoyable to watch. And it kind of made me mad about, like, some of the 49ers decisions. But it was a pretty good game. And we'll talk about the 49ers mistakes in a minute. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought the second half was really good. The first half was a little slow. And I thought it was pretty sloppy, actually, in the first half. I thought as the second half came together, you really started to see why those two teams were in it, and they started to play up to their capabilities. As I was watching the first half of the game, I was kind of like, are these really the two best teams the NFL has? But they definitely played that way in the second half. But the first half got off to a slow start for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
So first thing to probably talk about here as it relates to the game, I thought that one of the major turning points of the game was the Chiefs offense did almost nothing in the first half. And, you know, the 49ers went into the locker room up a touchdown. And I felt like this should be a 17 to 20 point game right now, given the way the Chiefs have played. And when it wasn't that, I thought the 49ers might be in a little bit of trouble because they hadn't really capitalized on the Chiefs not doing anything on the offensive side of the ball.
I agree. I thought it was too big of I thought it was too short of a lead for the 49ers to be safe. And I kept saying over and over again while I was watching the game that the Chiefs are really going to win this because they're not down enough to be like scared, you know. They're only down a touchdown. Like they have nothing to worry about. So I agree with you there. The 49ers just did not have a big lead. They didn't have a big enough lead at all during any point of the game. So that's ultimately why the Chiefs won at the end.
And it was kind of interesting that the game was almost like a microcosm of the Chiefs season, where the first half of the season, and I guess it was way more than the first half of the season for the Chiefs, because you know, it went really up to the playoffs. Their offense looked the first half of the Super Bowl like they did most of the regular season. And then in the second half, their offense looked like they had in the playoffs.
They started lighting it up in the second half. You know, Mahomes kept on, he threw two touchdowns, I think, in the second half, and just all history. The 49ers, though, like the Chiefs' offense was better in the second half, but the 49ers just, they just made so many poor decisions, I feel like. And also injuries. I know injuries didn't really help. Like, you know, Dre Greenlaw was one of their best defenders all year, and he got injured in the first half, literally running out, literally being hyped and running out after a kickoff. And he like got an Achilles injury and was out for the game. Debo suffered a hamstring injury in, I think, the third quarter. And he battled that through the rest of the game, which that probably affected his receiving. And obviously, in overtime, Kittle got a shoulder injury and left. But he did only have like 4 yards before that, so I don't really think that was too much of a factor. But that is a big red zone factor because he's obviously a big target like in the red zone. So, you know, I don't know. But what are your thoughts on that? Because I feel I'm going to talk about Kyle Shanahan in a minute because I think we both have some words about him. But what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I thought that the 49ers started to, you know, the game was kind of almost like a game of attrition, right? And the 49ers started to lose a lot more players along the way than the Chiefs did. You talked about Dre Greenlaw's fluke injury coming out onto the field. I thought that really hurt the defense, to be quite honest, because I thought that they were very different in the second half without him. And I think what also happened in the second half is the 49er defense started to wear down. You know, the Chiefs kept them on the field longer in the second half, and you could tell by the end of regulation and into overtime, the 49ers were a different defense. I think that also probably influenced one of the questionable decisions by Shanahan, which was to elect to take the ball in the overtime. Now, let's step back for a second on this one first, because I think this is one area where I'm not sure that I agree with a lot of the criticism on him. Like, because I heard some pundits after the Super Bowl was over saying that was like, a decision that cost them the Super Bowl and it was like so bad. I don't know if I would have taken the ball first there, because I do think you like to be in a position to know what you need, right?
Yeah,
Like, so
right. Yeah.
if I know I need a field goal to tie the game, that influences the way I run my offense, because I'm getting myself into a position to need the field goal, but knowing that maybe a touchdown wins me the game. Having said that, I do understand why he did it, because, at the end of the fourth quarter there, it was almost like field goal, field goal, field goal, back and forth. And if you do that in overtime, like if the 49ers kick a field goal and then the Chiefs kick a field goal, if the 49ers get the ball back, which they would have, and they kick a field goal again, it's over and they win. So I didn't really have as big of a problem with that. Like, some of the logic I've heard from that to me is a little bit insane. Like, I think I heard Mike Florio on Pro Football Talk using this analogy of, well, if you get the ball second, you have four downs, as opposed to if you get the ball, first, you have only three downs, because you need the four downs if you have it second. And I understand what he's saying, but I don't know that I fully agree with that, because there's a lot of pressure that goes with fourth downs,
Yeah,
right?
that shouldn't be
Like,
your mentality.
you don't really want to be in a situation where you're at fourth and 10 saying, I have to convert this to just keep the game going. So
Yeah,
I
because nobody at the end of the day, nobody wants a fourth down, you know? Like that's actually even worse. Like that just you should not have the mentality like that, because on a fourth down, there's more pressure than ever, you know?
Yeah, and I guess his logic is you have one more play, right? Like, you have one more play. You have four plays on a series to make the first down instead of three, because you have to go for it. But again, I think that's true, but there's some other side of that. Like, there is some pressure off of having the ball first and just being able to do what you want with it. But I also think, and I'm gonna just again defend Shanahan a little bit here on this, I think his defense was exhausted. I think he partially made that decision to give his defense a little bit of a break and put the offense on the field, thinking that if I can give them 5 or 6 minutes here to catch their breath, maybe they'll be able to at least hold them to a field goal, which they didn't, but maybe that was his rationale.
At the end of the day, though, his defense was exhausted because he made poor decisions on the offensive side, which led to them being three and out almost every time in the second half. And being making the defense go back on the field to deal with Mahomes for almost the whole second half. Like, this is what I agree with you that that was not Shanahan's like game-changing bad decision at the end there at overtime. I think more of his bad decisions came from the second half, particularly where he did not run the ball with Christian McCaffrey as much as he did in the first. And you know what happens with McCaffrey? Like, again, we talked about this last week where like running the ball is just like with the Steelers and like running the ball is like predictable and stuff with them. Like if you're not running the ball, it's very predictable. Like if what you're going to do, and you're going to pass the ball every play, you know, like, and that affects the 49ers because not only were they not running the ball with McCaffrey, but you have Debo who is battling a hamstring injury. You got Brandon Ayuk being like double covered some of the time, and Kittle only had 4 yards. So he's obviously being locked up too. And he's only a red zone target, but being a red zone target doesn't mean anything when you're not even close to being in the red zone and not even close to getting a touchdown. So I really think he made the mistake there, not running the ball with the offensive player of the year more in the second half, because he did almost have 4 yards a carry. He had like 22 rushes for, I think, 80 something yards, maybe 80 yards. But it also having him back there more also dictates like it doesn't have to be with like running with him every time, but it like he's a great receiving back too, so he could even catch the ball more often and stuff. I just think Kyle Shanahan did poorly in that area. Like I think they should have used him more in the second half, because it was obviously working the first half, you know? He'd get 4 yards a carry, and then when the Chiefs didn't expect it, he went off for like a 40-yard touchdown, you know? So it amazes me that he can't think of a better solution for that, because You got to run McCaffrey more.
Yeah, I think with any offensive-minded coach, the thing you have to really watch is sometimes people who are innovative on the offensive side of the football tend to get a little too cute for their own good. And I thought that McCaffrey ran the ball pretty well in the first half. I thought that again, when you have the lead, this is where I go away from analytics and I go away from innovation, and I say, old school football tells me that I want to keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands. Right? So if I can keep him on the bench, he can't score. And you know, the three and outs don't do that. And here's the other side of this. Like, we could talk about the effectiveness of Brock Purdy as a quarterback, and he's had a really good first 2 years. I want to say two things on this. Number one is McCaffrey is perhaps the best running back at his position in the NFL. All around, I think you have to say that right now, right? Like, I mean, if
I
you
think he's one of the best players in the NFL right now. He had a
Yeah, so
phenomenal year.
you want to get him the ball. Brock Purdy, as good as he's been the last couple of years, is not one of the top three quarterbacks in the NFL right now. He's just not.
He's just not that guy yet. And like, it's not that he hasn't proven it. Like he's proven to be a very good quarterback, you know? Like he's doing a very good job as his past 2 years, but McCaffrey has arguably been that guy since he's gotten into the league and when he's not injured, you know? Even when he was on the Panthers, he was still dominant. It was just a factor of if he got hurt or not, because obviously when he's hurt, I mean that takes a toll on the team because it makes him dramatically worse. And we saw that, I feel like, when he doesn't have the ball, Purdy struggles to get his receivers open and stuff and make passes to them. So I feel like McCaffrey is easily the most valuable player, not only on the offense, but on that team. So when Shanahan made the decisions to not give him the ball, that obviously is going to cause three and outs, because when you don't have the best player on your team getting involved, it's harder to convert downs, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think that goes back to, at the end of the day, when you're playing in a championship game and you have a lead, or and the game is on the line, you want the ball in the hands of your best player. And I don't think Brock Purdy is the best player on the San Francisco 49ers offense. I think Christian McCaffrey is the best player on the offense of the San Francisco 49ers. And I think it's one of those situations where in the second half of that game, you can't get him the ball enough.
Yeah, I can't get over how poorly executed that was for Shanahan. So I don't know. I mean, you're wondering why you lost the game. That's one of if not the biggest factor of why you lost. You could blame it on injuries, but to me, that's the biggest reason.
Yeah, I think it certainly didn't help. And, you know, Shanahan is going to start to get this reputation, good or bad, right now as the guy who can get you there, but the guy who can't win the big game. And I don't know that I agree with that, because, like, you know, people say that about people who don't win Super Bowls, but, like, is the NFC Championship not a big game? You know, I mean, it is a big game. Playoff games are big games. But I do think he's going to have to readjust his style a little bit. Like we talked about last week, you can't coach the same way in championship games that you do in other situations, because there's just more on the line. Now, kind of tying with that a little bit, was the decision early midweek to fire their defensive coordinator, Steve Wilks. So I'm interested in the context of this game, of what you thought about that decision.
I think that just kind of displays more of a character of who Kyle Shanahan is, you know. I feel like a lot of him blamed him a lot of people blamed him for the loss in the Super Bowl. So I feel like he kind of took that, like all that hate, and he put it towards put the blame on the defensive coordinator for giving up 25 points to the Chiefs, which in the first half they gave up three. And because of his poor decisions in the offense, they gave up 22 more because they were on the field every second of the freaking second half. So I really think that shows who Kyle Shanahan is, kind of, and he's going to put the blame on other people over himself. Like you could just say it was a bad coaching moment. You know, everybody makes mistakes, but you don't have to fire a guy who coaches ass off the whole year, and you're blaming him for giving up 25 points in the Super Bowl, which I guarantee you half of those wouldn't have even been given up if Kyle Shanahan makes better decisions on the offense and with McCaffrey. So that is not the defensive coordinator's fault. I don't care what anybody says. It was a very poor decision to fire him, and it makes me pretty enraged when Kyle Shanahan did that, because it's just I just don't understand that. He obviously just does not want to take the blame.
There was a point in the game, I think there was about 2 minutes left, and Shanahan called a timeout, and you could see the frustration that he was trying to contain, but he wasn't containing it very well, where he was not happy with the defensive formation that was called. So here, I often say this, right, where when I see a very poor decision by the offensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator or special teams, I often say, why is the head coach not calling timeout and stopping it and saying, we're not doing that?
Right.
So I
Yeah,
give
I
him
agree with that
credit for
too.
that. I give him
Yeah.
credit for that. I think like that I like to see that when you, because at the end of the day, the responsibility lies with you as a head coach of what happens, right? Like if you give up an 80-yard touchdown pass, nobody's talking about the defensive coordinator, as we saw with Dan Quinn. You know, like they gave up 50 points and he gets a head coaching job, and you know, all of a sudden Mike McCarthy's on the hot seat, but they're gonna put it on the head coach. So I like that side, but it also it struck two chords with me. The first is, okay, I see there's some discontent here, right? Like of I there's not maybe as much trust as there should be between the head coach and the defensive coordinator, where I don't trust you to run that play, so I'm going to intervene and call something different. But the other piece of that is, how are we getting to the Super Bowl? And I'm not like calling out the 49ers specifically for this, because I think it's a problem that we see a lot in sports. How do you get to the championship game and you're not on the same page with your assistant coaches in terms of formations and what should be called in a given situation? Counting preseason, this is about the 20th game or 21st game you've played now during the season. You've practiced six times a week. You know, you've done training camp. It just baffles me a little bit that, you know, we still don't agree on what formation to call at that particular time.
I honestly had that question too several times throughout the week. I just don't know how you could be like 4 months into the season, last game of the year, Super Bowl, and you're still not on the same page. So I agree with you there. I really don't know. I don't know what else to say about it, because obviously like it's more of a thing between like them and Shanahan and the defensive coordinator, but just baffles me too that they're really not on the same page, and even after like almost 5 months of playing. So I really don't know.
You know, one other argument I heard that came out of various forums this week was the whole idea that, you know, the Chiefs now turning into a dynasty, obviously with three Super Bowl wins, which I totally agree with. But the idea that you have to have an elite quarterback to be able to beat the Chiefs and contend with them. And I see the point, but I also don't see the point, because here's the thing. Patrick Mahomes beat Lamar Jackson. He beat Josh Allen. He
CJ
beat
Stroud.
CJ
No, no,
Stroud.
sorry. Sorry,
Yeah,
no, he
he
didn't.
didn't beat Stroud, but he beat the guy who
Tua.
beat Stroud. Right?
Yeah.
He beat Tua and he beat Brock Purdy. So my question is this: who else is there right now? Like, we can make
Yeah.
the argument of Joe Burrow, but he's hurt, you know. I mean, he did it once, but I think that what I see out of this is you can have an elite quarterback, but when you're facing the guy who is a once a generation type player, it doesn't really matter.
It's just, yeah, I agree with you. Like, I feel like right now, we saw that this year, you know, the Chiefs were struggling early on, but once they get into the playoffs, it's like Mahomes and Kelsey and them are just unbeatable, you know? Like, it doesn't matter who you have. But I thought easily the 49ers had a way better roster than them, and they still lost, you know? It even helps too, because Purdy was great all year, you know? He was an MVP candidate for a while. And even with him there, they still couldn't beat Mahomes, you know? Tua was also an MVP candidate some of the year. He was like leading the league in passing yards for a while. I think he actually might have ended with it too. I don't know. He was close, but he was considered that too, and he still couldn't beat him, you know? Lamar was the MVP and he couldn't beat him. It's kind of like a Tom Brady situation. You know, I hate comparing Mahomes to Tom Brady because obviously Tom Brady's probably the greatest player ever, but it might just be one of those again where the dynasty builds up, and no matter how good your team is, you're just gonna struggle to beat the Chiefs, you know, whether you like it or not. So yeah, it's fascinating to see. I like how we're witnessing kind of another dynasty going on, and it makes me even more motivated to see that like they're kind of like the villain role now that the Patriots had for a while. So I think it's pretty cool, but I also think it is. I can see why a lot of people are upset, but I think it's cool that we have somebody like Mahomes that is kind of similar to Tom Brady in a way, in that way.
Yeah, so in my life, I feel like I've seen this movie 3 times already, right? I've seen the, well, maybe 4 times actually. I've seen the Tom Brady movie. I've seen the Joe Montana movie. I've seen the Michael Jordan movie, and I've seen the Wayne Gretzky movie of you can be really, really good, but a lot of times, unless something fluky happens, you're not beating those guys in championship games. And like that's just really what it comes down to. You know, at the end, until their time is up and it's somebody else's time to move into that role, right? Or at least like, you know, be able to then compete and battle it out for it. And I mean, I saw it with Tiger Woods in golf. I mean, like, you know, you had a lot of really good golfers go through at that period of time where Tiger Woods was in his prime, and it didn't matter. If Tiger Woods was playing his game, you weren't beating him. You know, I mean, like there were so many good basketball teams when Michael Jordan was in his prime, and it didn't matter. You know, I mean, like, so I think that we are kind of seeing this again with Mahomes. Now, football is a little bit different, and I think this is where it'll be interesting to see where Kansas City goes from here, because now they got to deal with the salary cap. They got to deal with players getting increases, particularly on the defense this year. I still think long term they're going to have to figure out another viable wide receiver probably as they move forward, as Kelce continues to get older. But Mahomes is in his prime. I mean, and he's not going anywhere for a while.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I agree with you too with all the talent. There is so much talent in the NFL right now. Not saying there wasn't before. I think obviously there's going to be talent everywhere in every decade, but there is so much young talent right now, especially young talent. And you never know if they're even going to get to show their full potential just because of Mahomes. Like, you never know if they're going to even beat him or not. So I think it's just kind of funny in that way that you got all this talent and it's not like a waste, obviously, but like, 'cause like there's individual awards too, like we saw with Lamar this year, but even he couldn't beat Mahomes. So I just think it's kind of funny in that way.
So I'm going to turn my attention to my jag off of the week pick here, moving us out of the Super Bowl talk. And my jag off of the week pick is all of the Steeler fans who have a different quarterback we should bring in every other day. So basically right now, from quote the odds on favorites to land different quarterbacks, our quarterback room next year will be Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, Justin Fields, Russell Wilson,
Russell Wilson.
and Kirk Cousins, and
Yep.
Ryan Tannehill, all 6 of them.
Yep.
Listen, I get it. I get it why people are speculating. I get it why people want a, you know, veteran presence or different combination. I think there is a 90% chance that the Steelers go into next year with their top two quarterbacks being Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph.
You said 90% chance.
That's what I believe, yes.
I think it's a little lower than that because I've seen some reports that say Mike Tomlin's very interested in Justin Fields and he likes the type of quarterback he is, which I'm not saying I agree with that. Like, obviously, I think Justin Fields is a solid quarterback. His potential's through the roof, you know. He's a great runner. He has a strong arm. He needs a little bit more accuracy help, but he has a strong arm. He's a good runner, but at the end of the day, and I think this is where you're going to get to, he hasn't proved anything. Like, I know he's been with the Chicago Bears for 3 years, and That, no offense, Chicago fans, but that's literally a torture of a franchise right now. Like, you guys haven't won anything in so long. I mean, you guys, I mean, the last time you were even close to a Super Bowl was when Cody Parkey missed the field goal to win the game against the Philadelphia Eagles, and then they ended up winning the Super Bowl. So, I mean, I get it that Fields has been on the Bears for 3 years, and that's kind of a torture show over there, but you got to remember too that Kenny Pickett has a winning record with the Steelers and has a better winning record by far than Justin Fields does. So, and I know that the Steelers are better than the Bears, but it just really shows that I don't know why you want someone that hasn't really proved that he's going to win with you over Kenny Pickett. You know, I'm not saying Kenny Pickett's good, but we haven't really gotten to see him play without Matt Canada. I mean, he played two games without him. One of them, it was his best game ever. And the other one, he was looking decent before he got hurt. And then they lost because he got hurt. So I just don't see the point of getting Justin Fields right now, especially when you're going to have to waste like a first or second round pick on him. So I don't see that at all.
I think we need to step back and look at it and say, rationally, if the Steelers would have either had Kenny Pickett or Mason Rudolph start every game this past year, they're probably 13-4.
Yeah, probably. Mostly
And
probably 12 and 5. That's more realistic. But yeah, they
12
would
and
have more
5,
wins.
13-4, we're not even having this conversation, right? Like, I mean, because at that record, they're probably either the number one wild card or they win the division, right? And they're the number one or two seed in the AFC. And you know, we're looking at it like, hey, they got a young roster, you know, like we can move forward, everything is good. I don't understand. I don't think people understand like how bad of a signing Mitch Trubisky was, and we'll get to him in a second because he was released this week. And like, you know, Rudolph and Pickett both this year, like they weren't perfect, but they were on a far different level than Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah, they won games. Every time Mitch was in, they lost.
And the other side of that, like, is people kind of go with this whole Justin Fields thing. Number one, I've heard repeatedly Mike Tomlin liked him when he was scouting him. Well, you know who else Mike Tomlin liked? Mason Rudolph and Kenny Pickett, because he drafted them. You know, so I don't know that that's a huge thing, but here's the thing. If you were looking at Kenny Pickett right now being swapped out for Justin Fields in a one-on-one trade, I would say that's a 50-50 proposition of happening. Maybe the Steelers do it and maybe they don't. I'd probably lean more toward they do it, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about giving up a number one or two pick at the least. And then we're talking about taking on a cap hit of about $22 million next year for his final year of his contract, which means then you're going to have to either make a decision now to sign and extend him, or he can be a free agent after next year. And, you know, with a team option. So I don't see that happening. Like I don't see them doing that because I don't think it's a smart football move.
I just think it's giving up too much for someone who hasn't really proved anything in the NFL yet. Like he's got good talent, you know, but he just hasn't proved anything. So I think it'd be a waste to give up, you know.
Yeah, and you know, the one that makes sense to me, if you can sign him as a free agent, that I think can help you immediately because he's still kind of in the prime of his career, is Cousins. Having
Yeah.
said that, I don't think Minnesota's going to let him walk. I think they're going to probably throw money at him and you know, make him their quarterback. Tannehill and Russell Wilson to me make absolutely no sense at all.
They are both washed. They are way out of their primes. They are done. There's no reason to sign them.
I would rather draft a guy and let him develop and have him as the third quarterback on the roster rather than bring in a Russell Wilson or a Ryan Tannehill. Like, and I know people are going to say, like, oh, Tannehill has experience in Arthur Smith's offense. Okay, well, number one, that was a few years ago now, right? Like, it's not like he had experience there last year. It's been a few years. Number two, you had Derrick Henry in the backfield, which is a big guy to have if you're the quarterback in the backfield in his prime.
You had AJ Brown as a receiver.
You had AJ Brown as a receiver. But number three, He's like old now. I mean, like, he wasn't 3 and 4 years ago, and he's getting injured now. Can he be a guy you want to bring in and make the number three quarterback and have him in case of emergency? Sure, but I don't think he's going to want to go somewhere and be the number three quarterback.
Now, here's where people argue that, oh, Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson, Ryan Tannehill, they're all the same age. Yeah, but Kirk Cousins was literally an MVP front runner this year before he got injured. He was literally second in the league, I believe, and he was first in passing yards, up there in touchdowns. He didn't throw any picks this year, really. I mean, it's just he's other another thing with Kirk Cousins too. He's a leader for the Vikings, you know? Like Justin Jefferson has the best receiver in the NFL, by the way, has even said this. He would not be as successful with the Vikings without Kirk Cousins as his quarterback. And I 100% agree with that because not only is Kirk Cousins a good quarterback, but he is a leader and he's a veteran. And that's what you need as your quarterback on your team. I know that he's like 35 years old, but as we saw that with Tom Brady, and I'm not saying he's Tom Brady, but it doesn't matter really how old you are, as long as you're being a leader and you're performing well. And he was an MVP front runner this year before he got hurt. So that would be the only move where I would love the Steelers to make because he's all of those things. He can help lead George Pickens because I kind of see George. I'm not saying he's Justin Jefferson, but he does have the potential to be up there close to Justin Jefferson. I think we saw that this year with him. And you also got Deontay Johnson. Those are two hotheads that. They were both hotheads this year. If you get a leader as your quarterback to help them develop and settle them down a little bit, they could be phenomenal. They could be a phenomenal duo with Kirk Cousins. So that would be the only move I would like the Steelers to make. But as you said, I don't think the Vikings will give up Kirk Cousins because I think he's too good to give up.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. And you go by the body of work in determining how old somebody really is, right? And like, Tom Brady was older than all of these guys, and he was still winning Super Bowls and playing at a very high level. So like when you looked at him every year, you were saying, okay, yeah, he's getting older chronologically, but he's not from a football standpoint. Kirk Cousins looks very different at this point of his career than Russell Wilson and Ryan Tannehill, just watching them play the game. So I think what you're going to see likely is the Steelers probably stand pat unless, again, a Ryan Tannehill will come here as the three quarterback, or Cousins decides to leave Minnesota. Then I think we can see something different. But I think the move that they're going to try to make is to re-sign Mason Rudolph before free agency hits.
I would re-sign him. I think that would be another good move that the Steelers should make because he proved this year that he's a serviceable quarterback, and if you absolutely need him, he can win you a few games. So I think they should re-sign him definitely.
So, big story this week was three veterans of the Steelers being released, that being Mitch Trubisky, Presley Harvin, and Chuck Okorafor. None of those are surprising moves.
No.
I actually thought they might try to trade Okorafor, for like a later round pick. But I don't know that they would have gotten anything for him either. Any feelers out there? I'm sure none of those moves surprised you.
Man, I thought Trubisky and Presley Harvin should have been out of there after like half the season went by. Like they were horrible all year. It was so hard for me to watch the Steelers be at like the 45-yard line of their own territory, and them having to punt, and Presley Harvin would boot it 20 yards. It was just horrible. Like, you can't have that as a punter, man. And we said that multiple times that I think this that we think the Steelers need a better punter, and I think that is a step that they're going to try to improve on because obviously they cut him.
Yeah, and there's some options out there in terms of being able to sign a punter and or draft a punter. I just think at the end of the day, he's been here for a few seasons now, and you just really saw no progress in terms of the punting game, and what he was able to do in terms of field position. And we'll talk about that in a second too when we talk about the wide receiver room, but that's a huge factor in a team's success is how much you can pin the other team back to start, and then how much of a field position advantage you can gain on special teams.
I honestly think that I agree with you. There's no progression. I obviously think I actually think he got worse as his years in the NFL went. I think when did we draft him? Was it 2 years ago or three?
I want to say this was his third year.
Okay, so I actually think his rookie year was his best year.
Yeah.
I think he got worse as time went on. So I'm very happy with the move that they cut him.
Trubisky, no surprise. I mean, I think everybody knew once Rudolph was put in the game for him in the Colts game, his career as a Steeler was likely over.
Yeah.
They weren't going to bring him back. I think, looking back on it, that move at the time, people were like, oh, this will be a nice bridge from Roethlisberger. And looking back on it now, it has to be one of the probably worst free agent signings the Steelers have had in recent history. There was just nothing that they got out of that signing.
No, they wasted 2 years and $10 million. So yeah. There was
And
nothing.
here's the other side of the Kenny Pickett saga, right? If they benched Trubisky earlier last year and play Pickett, they probably make the playoffs last year.
Yeah. It's just all about the coaching, though. Tomlin was always kind of obsessed. I don't think he was obsessed with Trubisky. I just think he was a. I think you're going to agree with this, too. I think he was afraid to accept defeat on Trubisky. I think he was afraid to say that, oh, I made a bad choice of signing him. And he was afraid to take him out and give up on him, I think you're gonna agree with that too. But I think that was the bigger, I think that was the big part to why he never really got benched and never really got cut before.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it's fascinating to me because the same guy is the guy who drafted Mason Rudolph, right? I mean, like, so I don't know that I fully understand that logic, but I agree that was the logic of, we brought Trubisky in, we're paying him more than Rudolph, so he's got to play more than Rudolph. I even last year, like, I mean, we saw this with Broderick Jones and Joey Porter. Of like you watch the preseason games and you're like, yeah, Broderick Jones is one of their best linemen already. Joey Porter is their best cornerback already. And then like they're not starting until week four, and you're just kind of like, why are we doing this?
Why draft them if you're not going to start them? Like, especially if they have the first round talent that you drafted them for. I don't know. He makes some really questionable decisions, and I think that kind of shows how he's changed as a coach ever since he got in the league.
Well, I know that the argument is that whether or not they're ready like that quick, like it's just kind of easing them into that role. But as I'm not even thinking about this as a fan, right? Like if I'm a coach or if I'm a like general manager of something, if I know Broderick Jones or Joey Porter or Kenny Pickett are going to be, if I think they're going to be good, I don't care if they mess up every once in a while. I actually want them to mess up every once in a while because that's part of the learning curve of being a professional athlete.
That's just how it goes at the beginning. Everybody, the best athletes struggle at the beginning. It's just how you come back about it and like how you develop forward. Because obviously experience helps too, and the lack of experience is basically why they mess up. But I agree with you. I feel like I would rather have them mess up than to just have them sit on the bench for 4 weeks until they're finally in. So yeah, I don't understand that either.
Yeah, I mean, like I would rather see Joey Porter blow a coverage and get beat for a touchdown than Levi Wallace get beat for a touchdown because I know what's going to happen when Levi Wallace is on the field. He's going to get beat for a touchdown. Right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like that's just what's going to happen. I knew what was going to happen when Chuck Secorafor is playing, or Dan Moore is starting a tackle. They're going to get beat. Broderick Jones, he might get beat once or twice a game, but he's not going to get beat repeatedly.
Yeah. It's all about the learning experience, you know?
So I think that like that mindset needs to shift a little bit. We brought this guy in to play, but if they're not doing their job, then they shouldn't be playing.
Yeah.
So getting rid of those three frees up a fair amount of cap space too, where I think they're close to being at the salary cap now instead of like way over. I think you're going to see a lot more cuts and or restructuring of contracts before the free agency period starts. I expect that there'll be about $20 million under the cap before free agency starts, because I think you're going to see a lot more action before then.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that.
So two other fairly big stories this week, or I think to talk about as we talk about the Steelers wide receiver room. So we've talked about the quarterbacks, we've talked about the running backs. As we get to their wide receivers, I think there's two big stories going into next season. One of them is the maturation of Deontay Johnson and George Pickens, right? Like, they have got to continue to develop both physically, but I think more so mentally. And I say that because there's two different issues there. With Pickens, it's more of like, maybe not being selfish sometimes and feeling and like he's got to express himself in a more productive way.
It's more of an ego thing. Like, yeah.
Somebody needs to sit down with Deontay Johnson and say, you have to stop running backwards with the ball.
Yeah. He has not stopped doing that since he's entered the league.
And I don't think that's a hard conversation to have, right? I mean, like, if you catch the ball, I want you going forward. I don't care about going backwards where you might get an 80-yard gain, because most of the time you're going to get a 15-yard loss. I want you to catch the ball and I want you to move forward, right? And
Right.
like, that's a conversation that needs to happen. The other big thing I think is, what's the role of Calvin Austin moving forward? And what do you see as being the replacement for Allen Robinson?
For Calvin Austin, I think he's a solid receiver four. I do not think he's the wide receiver three. And honestly, I'd probably just keep him as the What is he the kick returner now? Like, has he
He
been the
is,
kick
yes.
returner? So I'm not, I don't really know how to explain how well he did this year on that, because it was obviously, I think, his second, it was his first full year. But I didn't think he was bad as a kick returner. So I'd actually probably have him stay there for a while, because I feel like he didn't really fumble the ball at all. I feel like he made some good runs here and there. I think he was a decent kick returner. For the receiver, it all depends on the cap space and the salary cap, but there is one guy that I would really love the Steelers to get, but I don't think they have any chance of getting him, because I think he's worth too much. It's Michael Pittman Jr. I really want to see him as a Steeler, because I think I've talked about him for so long with other people. I think he's a great receiver, and I think he's one of the most reliable receivers in the NFL. Like, he was with the Colts this year with a backup quarterback in Gardner Minshew. He still had almost 1,000 and a, I think he had 1,100 yards almost. So, like, he's obviously a great receiver. And I could say this too, because on my fantasy football team this year, he carried my fantasy football team. So I would, and I know that's a whole different thing, but I would really love to see him as the Steelers' next receiver. But I don't think it'll happen.
Yeah, I think he would be great. I agree. It probably won't happen from a financial standpoint. I would really like to see them not bring in somebody who was 35 years old and past their prime, like they seem to have be doing sometimes with these guys. I would like to see a third or fourth round draft pick as a wide receiver, and somebody who has some potential upside to be explosive in a slot position.
I agree with that too. Yeah. I was just bringing up the Michael Pittman point, because I feel like he's way too good to not show interest in him. And
Yeah, absolutely.
I actually don't think he's going to go back to the Colts this year. I think he'll go somewhere else to a much better team. I'm not saying the Colts are bad. I think they're good. It's just, I think he's going to go to a much better team, to like a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Pittman's at that point of his career, right? Where, I mean, he's probably looking at it saying, I want to play for a winner here, because he really hasn't done that yet.
Yeah.
And kind of looking at that, those odds. I think, when you look at the wide receivers, depth is a problem right now to me, where you should be getting in today's NFL good production from like your top four receivers, with even your number five doing some things. And I just didn't see much from the production of either Robinson or Austin. And that may have been the way they were used. And that been a problem. So I'm willing to go another year with Austin because he's young and say, hey, let's see how he does this year. I don't think Robinson comes back. And I really would just like to see another guy get drafted because I think you need that. But the problem is you also need some leadership in that room.
I do think Allen Robinson, I think he was a good leader. I agree with you. His lack of production this year was not good enough to be a receiver three.
Yeah, so we'll see how that plays out. Again, it's hard to predict with free agency before the draft, but I really think they need to invest some draft capital in that position once again, because the other thing is Deontay Johnson, is I think has another year left on his contract. And to me, you really have to evaluate him in the context of a new offensive coordinator next year because he hasn't done enough to be an $18 million a year wide receiver. I think he's productive, but to me, he's not even the number one receiver on the team right now. And it's going to be hard to justify paying him as a top 10 receiver in the NFL when he's not at that level.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he needs to do a lot more to prove that he's a receiver one. I think it's easily safe to say that Pickens is going to be the receiver one next year.
So two other quick news stories to talk about as they relate to Pittsburgh sports this week. Pitt basketball continues to be on fire over the last few weeks. They got a huge game against Louisville tonight, but it's going to be interesting to see if they can keep up this run toward the NCAA tournament. I think if they go, 5-1, obviously if they go 6-0, I think they make the tournament down the stretch. But I think if they even go maybe 5-1 or 4-2, and win a game or two in the ACC tournament, it's going to be hard to justify keeping a good ACC team out. I've seen, some bracketology this week where you have, some Big East teams still in there over Pitt, and I'm like, they don't really play that hard of a schedule anymore. When you start getting down into factoring the games against North Carolina, Virginia, Duke, the ACC is not an easy place to win.
Looking at the Pitt schedule, it is kind of difficult, but there are a lot of games in here that they should win, and they have already beaten these teams. Like they play Louisville, obviously. I think a few like several weeks ago, they did beat them by 13, I think. I think it was 83 to 70. And I'm pretty sure they lost to Clemson earlier in the year, but yeah, they lost by 9, I'm pretty sure. But they play Florida State later on, NC State. They already beat NC State. They play Boston College. I'm sure they can deal with them. I think it's going to be a challenge, but I think they can overcome it because looking at their schedule, they can win a lot of those games. I think they just need to win almost all of them. Maybe one loss in there would not be bad, but I think they need to win most of them though.
And the Penguins season right now is on the verge of collapse, but they had a legend return home last night to be honored for his time in the NHL and as part of the team, and that's Jaromir Jagr. The Penguins franchise is really interesting because you can make the argument since about 1986, 1987, that at almost every point along the way, they may have had the best player in the game during most of that time up until now. When you had, Mario Lemieux, Jagr came in kind of toward the middle of Lemieux's time and then extended that time out. And then they had a few year gap in there before Sidney Crosby, and Malkin. So like, it's kind of amazing how they've been able to land that top tier talent of like greatest players in the history of the game. Four of them in the past 40 years.
They're just good at drafting, I guess. Yeah, don't really
Well, I
know.
think it's being good at drafting, but it's almost also like the anti-Pirates luck, which is the Penguins seem to have always had the first pick of the draft when the can't miss person was there. And there's some luck involved in that too, right? If you finish last and get the number one pick in a year where there's not the top blue chip prospect, you don't get that fortune of getting that person. But and the Penguins have not been bad for the last 40 years. Like it just seems like whenever they had their one down year, it was the year that like the best possible player was available.
Yeah, it's all part of the luck. And I agree with you too with the Pirates luck, because I feel like they haven't, like, obviously they got Henry Davis, and I think he's going to be a big game changer from Louisville. But, you know, they have not had too much luck in the draft. And I think it's partly their fault, but it's also partly because it's just bad luck.
Yeah, you know, that's another interesting take for the week, because I've seen the Pirates Twitter blowing up as well with this whole concept of, you know, who they're going to sign today, who they're going to sign today. And the answer is it's not going to be anybody big. They're going to get a cheap fourth or fifth starter to come in, try to add to that, build some stability, and that's probably going to
Yeah.
be it.
I think that Paul Skenes will be another very good asset too, because I think he's a gunslinger. But I actually do think the Pirates do have some potential. I think it's kind of all about their coaching.
Well, I think they got some potential. I think it's all about how much money they want to spend, because I think there's still an opportunity for them to go out and get an Ian Snell.
Yeah,
Or
I meant front office too. I don't know why I just said coaching, but yeah, coaching, front office, it all depends on that, because they do actually have some very young talent and they could be really good if they just get utilized well.
yeah, pitching is going to be the key, because, like, if you can add two more starting pitchers right now, you're basically probably on survival mode, which you can get through with two more quality starters until July, August, when Skenes gets here. Then he takes his spot in the rotation. Now you have a very formidable rotation.
I agree with you
So
there.
we'll get more into the Pirates. Spring training starts this week coming up. So I think they start playing games in about 10 days from now in Florida. So we're on the verge of baseball season now. All right, thanks for joining us on episode 6, and we will see you all next time.